Welcome to the Jacob's Well podcast. These messages are intended to feed you some great stuff that you can really dig your teeth into all week and beyond. That's why you can find it anytime, along with other great resources and ways to keep the conversation going at jacobs-well.net/leftovers. Enjoy the message.
Good morning. I'm Greg Meyer, and it's a privilege just to spend this time with you. I want to dive us in quickly here to talking about back to square one with us. And this is big stuff. And let me try to help us kind of feel the impact of it in a very real way, which is also maybe something I just need to share with some of you. But Melissa Melnick, who was an intern with us from 2012 to 2014 and is now doing a bilingual ministry in Richfield, trying to get that going, and on Tuesday, her son, Chris, who some of you know, who will be graduating from college in a week. Long story, ended up falling in the Mississippi and has not been found since. Right downtown by the dam. Yeah, I don't think any of us can even fathom what she is going through, and Chris's younger brother Austin and Chris's dad Tom and their family and friends. It's absolutely devastating, and I know many of you have been, excuse me, kind of hard for me even think about it, but I know many of you have been trying to be supportive to her in ways. That was on Tuesday evening that happened. On Wednesday there was a vigil at Oak Grove Lutheran Church where Tapestry, her ministry, meets, and I wanted to go to that and pulled up a little bit late because I was coming from another appointment, and I thought, well, gee, this just happened, and, you know, word's just starting to get out. I figured there are probably not going to be all that many people there, but I want to go there and hopefully get a chance to see her. And as I drove up, I mean, you couldn't park within blocks. The parking lot was full. The streets were full. I go, wow. Then I go inside, and the fellowship hall, the vigil's already going on upstairs in the sanctuary, but the downstairs in their fellowship hall is just lots of people. The hallways are full of people talking. I walk into the sanctuary. The sanctuary is just jammed. Every seat is jammed. It's just kind of overwhelming. What struck me was all these people here that really don't know each other. I mean, there are people from, you know, different language groups, a different race, all the normal filters that we use to sort ourselves out and we decide where we're going to be. None of them applied. People didn't care what language they were, what ethnicity, what race, what wealth, what neighborhood, whatever. All that stuff we normally use to filter ourselves, make sure we're sticking around with people that are like us, none of it mattered. They're all there because of one reason. They're all there because of Chris. Now, another way of saying that is that they were all there because of square one. We've all moved off of square one so far in terms of our relationships, in terms of what it means to be us. We've done so many things to divide ourselves and say, I'm this and I'm not that, and you're that and not this, and all that sort of stuff. But at a certain point, at certain times of life, we wake up and we realize that it's really only about square one. It's about us. And the only thing that really matters is Chris, or maybe it's Melissa, or maybe it's, you know, her brother Austin, her dad Tom, but our connection, this compassion, this hurt that we feel around him. And, you know, that's it. Square one is really pretty simple, and it's pretty straightforward. But in square one always needs to be our starting point. But it's only a starting point because we have to take it and we have to live it and we have to figure out how we are going to express it in our lives. It is my understanding that our lives aren't meant to change what is most important to us, those basic, those fundamentals of what life is all about, but our lives are meant to grow and to find ways to express it, to amplify it, to make it bigger and stronger, to put, you know, flesh and bones on possibilities that express what that square one is all about. So whatever square you are on now, wherever you find yourself right now, I hope it embodies what square one is about for you, and that you don't just forget it, you don't erase it with what you've become, because I know that's the battle I fight. I'm sure it's a battle we all fight. You know, on your outlines you'll find this, but square one, I think, leads always, no matter what topic we're talking about. We're talking about relationship, we're talking about connection, we're talking about us today. But in wherever we're talking about, square one always leads to a journey of discovery, open-endedness, possibilities, hope, potential. not to a dead end of stuck. But that's where we end up in life. We end up in these dead ends. We end up stuck. And we don't know what to do with it. Last week, Chris Littlehigh talked about getting back to square one with God, acknowledging all the baggage and learning to let go of it and grabbing onto that vision of God that actually makes sense and moving forward through life with it. I don't think it's a big revelation to say that a lot of our popular notion about God in the church and outside of the church reflects a lot more of kind of our Western thinking of the last couple centuries than it does the God that we discover in the heart of the Bible, or the God that we sort of discover in our own hearts when we're quiet enough to sort of be still and see who and what this God is and what God looks like to us. This week we're moving on and we're talking about getting back to square one with us, this concept of together, this concept of relationships. But somehow, somewhere, we all manage to get ourselves too far away from square one. We get ourselves backed into corners. We get ourselves worked into dead ends with our relationships that don't reflect what our better selves know should be happening. And here's the catch. We don't know how to fix it. And while this is certainly an oversimplification, I would say that the dead end of us, the dead end of this square one of us, is me. It's when me becomes more important than us. We lose the power of us. We lose a vision of square one about being part of us for that familiarity and the convenience of me. After all, my needs are pretty apparent. They make themselves known. They have an automatic call on me. They want to elevate me above everything else. What I don't realize is how I've gotten lost from what life is actually about, and it's more about us than it is about me. At least those need to be in relationship with each other. There is a word that's been reinvented that refers to this realization that the world is not just about me. Actually, it is. I'm the only one that actually exists. You here are all extras in my life this morning. Did you know that? Okay, no. You're all thinking, I thought it was the other way around. So there's a word called Sonder. Just take a peek at this.
Sonder. You are the main character. The protagonist, the star at the center of your own unfolding story. You're surrounded by your supporting cast, friends and family hanging in your immediate orbit. Scattered a little further out, a network of acquaintances who drift in and out of contact over the years. But there in the background, faint and out of focus, are the extras. The random passersby, each living a life as vivid and complex as your own. They carry on invisibly around you, bearing the accumulated weight of their own ambitions. Friends. Routines. Mistakes. Worries. Triumphs and inherited craziness. When your life moves on to the next scene, there's flickers in place, wrapped in a cloud of backstory and inside jokes, and characters strung together with countless other stories that you'll never be able to see, that you'll never know exists, in which you might appear only once, as an extra sipping coffee in the background.
So look down the row that you happen to be sitting in and notice that maybe the first person that you're not really familiar with, don't look too long, they'll think it's creepy. So that person isn't just like there. That person is just like you with their own world, their own lives. If you could somehow inhabit their consciousness for just a moment, you would be so amazed, so in awe, so fascinated with the complexities and the wonders that they are and that they're dealing with. And everyone in this whole planet is like that. Those 6 million people in Somalia are like that. we somehow need to hold that and realize that being in the presence of another person is always, I mean, always an honor. It is a get to. We don't always have the time to be fully aware of all the people that pass us and that we interact with. I know it's not something that is possible. But somehow we need to have that be our assumption that they are real people with their own needs, and they are as worthy of love and attention and full of awareness, and their life is just as important as everyone else's. Square one is about changing your default setting. It's about starting at the right place. And when it comes to us, square one sets that default at everyone matters. Everyone matters. I mean, we each have to figure out what square one is for ourselves. And we need to maybe fill in those boxes, fill in the things that square one is about. But I think it's hard to argue with the fact that one aspect of square one is that everyone matters. And one way of understanding God is that God is experiencing life in a way that always keeps at its heart and in its eyes square one. And then lives out life as if that were the reality. That is the vision. And then we're empowered by that vision to live that way. And it changes who we are and what we're able to do. The Bible uses very different language for that, of course. It doesn't say it that way, but I think that's what it's trying to get at. When the Bible keeps lifting up some very, very fundamental ideas that then the rest of the Bible kind of riffs on and tells stories and shares ideas and writes letters about, always trying to find ways to embody those couple of very basic ideas. And one of them is this idea that there is something at the heart of it all. In the book of Philippians, Paul writes, he says, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is pleasing, whatever is commendable, if there is any excellence, if there is anything worthy of praise, dwell on such things. Let's change that last line. Put that at square one. That's what he's saying. Have that be your square one. Square one is harder to get to than you think, though. What happens is that we work our way through life, picking our own direction, starting from a good place, starting from instincts that know and that embrace and love in terms of relationship, that understand that everyone matters, but somehow we get, you know, we develop attitudes and opinions and beliefs and practices and habits and ruts and all this kind of stuff, and we end up at someplace else. And those things become the way we think and the way we live. And they often have very little to do with where our square one is. Somewhere in that maze that has no exit, there is no way for us to get to where we want to. I think that's one of the things we realize. That's why I call these things dead ends. We work our way through life and we get to a place where we are just at a dead end. And there is no way to where we want to go from there. That's what's so hard about it, because we aren't willing to do that. One of the truths about square one and about living this way is that you have to go backwards before you can go forwards from a dead end. If you're at a dead end, if you're like me, I don't want to give up on it. I just keep pushing forward. But guess what? You're at a dead end. You got to go backwards before you can go forward. And that requires a couple things. First of all, it requires a change of mind. You have to see something differently. You have to see the world differently. You have to realize that where you are is stuck, that where you are isn't working. I don't understand the world in a way that works. I don't see you. I don't see the people around me in a way that really makes sense. I need to unlearn that. I need to go backwards. The Bible, in the language of the Bible, it's metanoia is the word. It's called a change of mind. It's actually the word that gets translated as repentance. Repentance is changing your mind. It's seeing the world differently. And that can happen in a second. That's the aha, that's the insight. All of a sudden you realize that it isn't the way that it should be anymore. And you have an insight of how it could be and how it should be, but guess what? That doesn't change things necessarily, does it? I think getting back to square one always starts with a change of mind, but it can't end there, because just thinking things differently doesn't make them differently. We need to take it another step. Paul writes this again, let the same mind be in you that was in Christ Jesus. Have this mind, have this change of mind. But then it goes on, it says, have the same mind as in Christ Jesus. Then the sentence goes on, who, in other words, what did he do? He didn't just have this mind. We aren't just supposed to think like Jesus. We're supposed to do what Jesus did. Act it out, live it out, create new habits, new patterns, new ideals. James writes, be doers of the word, not merely hearers who are fooling themselves, all right? So it doesn't only require a change of mind, it also then requires a change of habits. And while a change of mind can happen in an instant, a change of habits takes a long time. Sociologists, psychologists say it takes us 6 weeks to change a habit. And there's some good reason for it. I've tested it many times by trying a new habit for 5 weeks, and sure enough, I've been able to prove it never sticks. Okay. Anyway, why 6 weeks? What's going on there? The first 3 weeks of changing a habit, all you're doing is kind of unlearning. You're trying to get rid of that old pattern. You're trying to unconvince yourself. And then after that, once you finally got rid of it, you've done the unlearning, then you have 3 weeks of doing the relearning. What kind of something new, right? So I'm at a dead end. I can't push on from here. I have to get back to square one. Once I'm back at square one, then I can move forward. Then I can actually embody the thing that I believe, that I hope, that I'm dreaming. An example, like you decide, I'm going to run every day. Okay, so for the first 3 weeks, you decided to run every day, but guess what? You actually have to do it. And it's really, really hard to do it. Your schedule doesn't have time for it. Your muscles thought it was really fun the first day, you know? There's all kinds of reasons. It's easier to be on the couch. After 3 weeks, some of that stuff has fallen away. But if you stop at that point, you know, you finally found room in your schedule. You've done it long enough that your schedule has given way. Your muscles aren't all that sore and anything more. But at 3 weeks, you say, well, I'm sure glad that's over now. So the another 3 weeks of pressing on and continuing to practice it, it actually becomes something you look forward to. It becomes part of your rhythm. It becomes part of who you are. 3 weeks to unlearn. 3 weeks to relearn. Relationships. Anybody have any bad habits in a relationship? Stephen Covey talks, I think, really powerfully about our emotional bank accounts and how we have a tendency to make lots of withdrawals in our relationships and not make as many deposits as we want. And he always encourages people, make only, you know, for an experiment, for 6 weeks, all right, only make deposits, no withdrawals. In other words, compliments. Helpful thoughts, ideas, offers, whatever it is, no withdrawals, no criticism, no critiques, no frowns, no skeptical sort of stuff. Believe me, it takes at least 3 weeks to learn to not do the negative stuff and to actually feel legitimate about the positive stuff you're offering. And I think it takes at least 3 weeks for the person that you're doing this to look at you and not be totally skeptical. How come he's being nice all of a sudden? You know, I'm not used to this. I don't really trust it. After 3 weeks, it kind of gets accepted, but you isn't who you are as a couple yet, or in whatever relationship is, at work or wherever. Another 3 weeks of practice and it starts, boy, I actually know why I'm complimenting him or her now, because I'm actually starting to see it in him or her now, and I actually want to do that. And guess what? It's changing our relationship. It's not just something, not a new face I'm putting on it. We're starting to see each other differently. We're starting to treat each other differently because of it. Anyway, the backwards and the forwards journey. Another reason why square one is so difficult, it means giving up your competency. What you are doing right now, whatever dead end you are in your relationships or whatever, it may not be working, but at least you know how to do it. And the ability to like know what I'm doing and to feel like I know that world is really powerful. It overrides our notion to realize that it's not working. It's not helpful, but I know how to do it, so I'm going to keep doing it. Anybody ever experienced that at work? My staff, put your hands down. we do it all the time. It doesn't matter whether it's good or bad. This stuckness, this dead end says, I would rather deny the problem, I'd rather blame others for it, I'd rather bully people into agreeing with me than actually doing it right, because it's easier. Competence is so seductive. I want to be good at this. All right? Square one says, I would rather be learning, i.e. incompetent. I don't know how to do this yet. I'm not good at it. But I'd rather be learning something that is actually significant than to say I've mastered something that doesn't work, that isn't the right thing. And sometimes it's not always bad. Sometimes those dead ends aren't bad places, but they just aren't the path to where you really want to go. Sometimes this path, this way of maybe relating to my kid worked to this point, but now we're in a place in a relationship where, you know, my kid isn't a grade schooler who just wants to do anything I say and just thinks I'm the greatest thing since sliced bread. Now they start challenging me, and I have to go backwards and say, what is our relationship about to find a new way to do it, all right? So your dead end isn't always a bad thing, but you've pushed that as far as you can. You need to go backwards. You need to unlearn in order to build your way forwards. And it's hard sometimes to give that up. Have you, any of you found that it was hard to give up the way you parented at one point in life to switch to the next gear that you have? It's really, really hard. And one of the reasons is you were good at it. You'd finally figured it out. Don't tell me you have to figure out a new way to be a parent, okay? So that's how that works out. So it's our job as Jacob's Well to not let each other lose the vision of square one, to forget what it represents, and then to tirelessly help each other, you know, get back to that home base and do that. So a couple of things here. I just want to suggest about what square one is like for us. And the first is, this is a little bit corny. I didn't do it on purpose, but once I wrote it, I saw it. So us always begins with you, all right? All right, us always begins with you, as in Y-O-U, right? Okay, and this is the truth. Did you know that your relationships can never be any better or any healthier than you are as an individual? You are a limiting, your ability to value yourself, to be secure in yourself, to be confident in who you are, to be honest with yourself, is going to be a limiting factor to how healthy your relationships, how much you can value them, how much you can trust them, how much you can feel confident in them. Now, the thing about that is that this always goes hand in hand. So if I have low self-esteem on myself, then I will probably overvalue the people around me. I create an imbalance. So if I have too high of a esteem about myself, I will probably undervalue the people around me. Now, but fixing this isn't something that you just do on your own. We always know that as well. This is a tandem sort of thing. And in other words, don't wait to have meaningful relationships or think you'll never have meaningful or healthy relationships until you get everything figured out yourself. No, I think we do it in tandem. As I develop a more healthy understanding of myself, I'm able to be more healthy in my relationships. As I'm surrounded by more healthy relationships, it helps me understand myself better and be healthier in myself. And it goes back and forth. We do this. It's a dance that we do together. But I think it's important that we realize that we're going to be open to it. We're going to be vulnerable. You're going to say, I don't have it all figured out. I can't have it all figured out. And I need your help to do this. The quintessential statement from the Bible, again, one of these basic fundamentals, these square ones from the Bible, love your neighbor as yourself. That word as is big there, isn't it? Love your neighbors as you live yourself. It doesn't just mean the same way, but while, right? There's a sense of time. As you're loving your neighbors, love yourself. And as you're loving yourself, learn to love your neighbors. It goes hand in hand. It's important. A question I think that's really important for us to realize is, as I am helping myself be healthier so I can have healthier relationships, how can I do that to other people? What power do I have to give permission to others for them to be more healthy? We have a lot of power to let other people experience themselves in ways where they can be healthier themselves so that they're able to be more healthy in the relationships they're in. I think it's a lot of what you saw Jesus doing as he was traveling and teaching and simply being with people. The next one here is, you know, rather than learning how to value each other, what we end up doing is getting stuck in dead ends that pit us against each other. And the fact is that we need each other. This is a square one. We need each other. It's not a choice. We need each other. Just look at this world. Look at our neighborhoods. Look at our families. Look at our marriages, our partnerships, our close relationships. And who here in a committed relationship of any sort would say that the picture of the relationship now is a wonderful reflection of what their or where their relationship began? I know Chris and I in our marriage could not say that we have that perfectly worked out. I think we both see the reflection of it. We're both committed to it. We both look for it in each other, and we experience it regularly, but we both know that we fail to fully live up to that image. You know, we let all kinds of things that are to divide us. There are so many reasons why we feel justified in dividing ourselves and saying, I'm right and that person's wrong. And if only, you know, I could be the one who decides all this stuff and determines what our relationship is like or what the world is like. But to take a page out of Tobiso's book, I don't know if you all remember Tobiso Rowan, a part of the Jacob's Well community. He had that incident some years ago where he fell out of a tree and now he's in a wheelchair, he's paraplegic, and through his depression and his long, long recovery, the bit of wisdom that kind of came to him that has fueled his whole future and his livelihood over that was, you know, why focus on all the hundreds of things I can't do because I don't have use of my legs instead of the thousands of things that I can do? And I think there's a similar message for us here today. Why do we focus on the hundreds of things that divide us gender, age, income, nationality, language, religion, race, culture, neighborhood, subculture, hobbies, politics, sexual preference, you know, gender orientation. Why do we allow those things to divide us instead of the thousands of things that connect us? Don't the thousands of things that we have in common just totally overwhelm that? We all breathe. We all eat. We all have a body temperature of somewhere about around 98.6. Now, we all need love. We need companionship. We search for meaning. We like to do good. We want to be trusted. We want to be found of value. We wake up in the morning to have other people be of value to us. We all need clean air, clean water. We need opportunities. We need jobs. We need opportunities. And then there is this minor issue that we all share a planet. Yeah, if you look underneath your feet, guess what? This is it, folks. We're in this together. What happens to this planet? It's going to happen to us. You know, that's just an enormous thing. We as human beings are a fragile species that is fortunate enough to have being in this universe that normally the vast, vast majority of it would not be hospitable for us. We have this small, itty-bitty, little, fragile microcosm that we can exist in. In fact, we can thrive on. And I would say, when you consider the vastness of the universe that we are not able to exist in, or is not accessible to us, and this itty-bitty bit that we do share and we can be at, maybe we need to work together about how we are going to live in this place, and how we're going to manage it, and how we're going to be a part of it together. But rather than figuring that out, what we tend to do as human beings is we divide and conquer, and we pick fights with each other, rather than realizing, I think we need each other. I think this is how we're going to get through this. One of our mantras here at Jacob's Well is that you were created for community. Everything about you, psychologically, genetically, physiologically, sociologically, says that you are hardwired for community. We need each other. It's the context that makes life purposeful. My last thought about square one for us is this, and you all need to find your own, all right? Find out what you believe and how you would articulate these square ones, but this last one that I would encourage as we, you know, keep making this long journey backwards so that we can go forwards into this life together is this: us can change the world. Us can change the world. By that, I don't mean it's you can do more when you combine with other people than you can do yourself, although that's obviously true. I'm talking about when we see the world as a place where us is the reality. That is how we define life. We see that everyone matters. We see that that begins with ourselves, that we know in our heart that we need each other. That is when change can happen. That is the vision that God keeps calling us back to. In fact, it's the vision of that is cast through the Bible the entire time as we dig in and see the heart of it. Us can change the world. Would you join me in prayer? God, I don't know that we model this very well, but we do gather here, maybe forgetting why. Maybe we gather here just to, we're used to it. There's some good stuff, good ideas, good music. But really we're here because we know that life is impossible on our own. Help us have this vision of us that would give us the courage and the strength and the support of other people to walk backwards to square one and have a fuller vision of it, and then to walk forward embracing you and others in this tightly woven rope that makes life worth living, that helps us envision the kingdom and embody the kingdom that you would have for all people. Help us be about that every day. Amen.
Thanks for listening. If you found this podcast valuable, please pass it along to others. And we'd love to hear from you too. You can email us at info@jacobs-well.net or message Jacob's Well Minneapolis on Facebook. We see what we do as a community really making a difference for people. Since you're listening, you probably have too. If you'd like to make a donation to support this work, you can find ways at jacobs-well.net/give. Thanks. Listen again next week or join us in person Sunday mornings at 10:30.